You are tuned to listener-supported public radio. This is KBBI Homer AM 890. I'm Kathleen Gustafson. The time is 9:02 a.m. And this is the coffee table. Topic today is State Ballot Measure 1. And let's check in on our guests. Panelist Kara Moriarty, the CEO of Alaska Oil and Gas Association. Do you read me?
I'm here. Good morning,
Kara. Great. Good morning. And while I'm at it, I will introduce representing Yes on One, Paul Seaton.
Good morning.
Good morning. And Bob Shavelson. Good morning. Oh, I'll bet I have Senator Machicki now. Senator Machicki, do you read me?
I do.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Good morning to you. So thank you so much. Bob Shavelson is also here. Bob Shavelson, good morning.
Thank you, Kathleen. Nice to be here.
Okay, great. We are all assembled. And the first thing I'd like to do is talk about the ballot measure. So this is ballot measure one, a ballot initiative increasing taxes on oil production fields that meet the following criteria: located above 68 degrees north latitude in Alaska, the North Slope, have a lifetime output of at least 400 million barrels of oil, and had an output of at least 40,000 barrels a day in the last calendar year. A yes vote on one supports increasing taxes on oil production fields. A no vote opposes the ballot initiative on the North Slope production fields that produce above a certain amount of oil. So I want to thank everyone for being here today, but let's kick it off with yes on one. So I would like the pros to go first, and Paul Seaton of Homer is here. Can you begin to talk about, you've got 5 minutes between the two of you to talk about why you support State Ballot Measure 1.
Well, good morning, Kathleen, and the listening audience of KBBI. I know it's a very thoughtful audience and wants to understand real numbers, so I appreciate KBBI posting on their website a short graphic presentation I made for the Rotary Club here in Homer.
I want to interrupt you because it's on the Facebook page.
On the Facebook page.
Yeah.
These 8 slides may be helpful for the listening audience to see the actual bar graphs now or for later reference. We are using real data from the last 5 years under Governor Parnell's SB 21 tax system instead of making estimates and projections of future prices or volumes and then saying how it's anticipated to work. You can find these graphs and answers to common questions on our website, alaskasfairshare.com. That's no apostrophe, just alaskasfairshare.com. It's important to realize that the current tax, SB 21, is very complex, and ballot measure number one in November is simply a reform of elements of that tax, and it's not a new tax system. Any new tax system would require years of computer and regulation changes to implement, but this initiative changes are relatively simple, and it goes into effect 90 days after certification of your yes vote, so money is available next year. There are 5 important elements of ballot measure number one. First, it applies only to our oil under state land and only to a field that has already produced over the 400 million barrels and continues to produce over 40,000 barrels a day. All other new fields and other fields receive the exact same tax incentives as under SB 21. Second, it changes the ridiculously low minimum tax rate of 4%, way less than you pay in sales tax, to 10%. And above the price of $50 a barrel slowly adds a little progressivity that caps out at 15%. We also change the additional profits tax, which is this complicated thing in SB 21, if they ever start paying profit tax, but they're probably not going to in any near future the way they calculate things. Third thing this does is Alaska's fair share only allows expenses that are related to the production in these fields to be deducted from the taxes of these fields of what they have to pay. This is called ring fencing. It's done worldwide to keep oil companies from shifting unrelated costs to lower their taxes. It also makes the tax calculation monthly like it used to be, instead of the estimated annual tax. Fourth thing it does is Alaska's fair share gets rid of the $8 per barrel tax credit. These three fields never needed any tax credit for over 40 years. So this is just a massive giveaway of your oil value to the companies. And fifth, ballot measure number one adds transparency so the legislature and the public can see the actual costs and profits the companies make in doing their oil production tax filing. Now we are blind unless there are more than three owners of each field, and then we only get aggregate data. ConocoPhillips is the only company that reports Alaska separately, and only because federal law requires it as a condition for the approval of the ARCO merger back when, to try to prevent anti-competitive action. Alaska has lost all its production tax value under SB 21 in the last 5 years. We gave it a try and it failed Alaska. I urge you to vote yes on ballot measure number one. Remember the three promises SB 21 made: more production, but under SB 21, production has fallen each year; more investment, Prudhoe Bay lost investment from $800 million down to $200 to $300 million; more jobs, SB 21 went into effect and we lost jobs every year. We now have lost about 5,500 jobs, and about a third of those jobs are now for non-Alaskans. SB 21 failed and needs to be reformed. Vote yes on ballot measure number one. We need to get Alaska's fair share. That's only fair. Bob?
Well, thank you, Paul. If I have another minute here, Kathleen, I would just say, you know, when I look out of Ketchikan Bay, I don't see oil rigs. And the reason I don't see oil rigs is because of a guy named Jay Hammond. And he was probably one of our greatest governors here. And Jay Hammond, of course, was one of the fathers of the permanent fund. He played an instrumental role in our state. But when he was asked, how much should we tax the oil companies? Jay Hammond said, and this is a quote, "For every cent we can possibly get. After all, just as it's the obligation of oil company CEOs to maximize benefits for their shareholders, so it is the obligation of the state CEO to do the same for this." What Hammond was talking about is that the oil company should get a third of the value, people of Alaska should get a third of the value, the federal government gets a third of the value. That calculation has been greatly skewed now.
Okay, thanks, Bob Shavelson and Paul Seaton, here to represent Yes on One. Kara Moriarty, CEO of Alaska Oil and Gas Association, and Senator Peter Michicki, would you both like to take a few minutes to speak, or who would like to start?
Kathleen, this is Kara. I'm happy to start. First of all, I echo Mr. Keaton's comments about thank you for having us, and good morning to folks in Homer and other areas who are listening. This is a very important last issue.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Kara. Can you, or if you're using a speakerphone, can you try to just use the phone because you're breaking up?
Is that better?
That is far better. Thank you.
Okay. I'm still having some background on my end, so hopefully it's better. As I was saying, you know, 2020 has been an incredibly tough year for all Alaskans. There's no denying that. And ballot measure one comes at a very critical juncture when we have extremely low oil prices. When this initiative was introduced about a year ago, prices were actually $25, maybe even $30 higher than they are today. And so we have to look at this holistically. And the reality is, Mr. Seaton made some claims about Senate Bill 21 causing the collapse in the economy, and that's simply not true. I think if you look back at what happened after Senate Bill 21 passed, a common thing that is forgotten is the crash in oil price. When Senate Bill 21 was passed, oil prices were over $100 a barrel, and they crashed, and jobs were lost across the globe in the oil and gas industry. Alaska was not immune to that. And production did stabilize. We had a production loss of 25% from 2007 to 2013, and production did stabilize. And there was actually an increase 1 year from next during Senate Bill 21. It did not decrease every year under Senate Bill 21. But more importantly, we have more production today than was forecasted when Senate Bill 21 passed at prices over $100 a barrel. But as with most ballot measures, there are various factors in the ballot measure that are very difficult to interpret. I think it's something that happens with ballot measures unintentionally. There's a lot of ambiguity. It creates a lot of confusion. And, you know, I'm very proud to work with a coalition of over 400 businesses across the state of Alaska, Alaska Native corporations, labor unions, and others who believe ballot measure one is the wrong tool and bad policy for the state of Alaska. And I'm happy to turn it over to Senator Michiki for a couple minutes before our 5 minutes is up.
Sure thing. Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you. I guess I would echo a lot of the points that Kara made. I pulled up this morning the spring revenue forecast, which is laced with comments about COVID-19 and how every industry and the resulting revenue from every industry. I mean, looking at fisheries tax reductions and reductions expected from tourism. You know, you're looking at everything essentially halved because of the impacts due to COVID. And we're all seeing those impacts. Instead of thinking about oil and gas with this current initiative, I just ask people to think about Industry X. And when they think about Industry X, is now the time to have a large-scale, game-changing tax increase through the initiative process, rather than taking the time in the legislature, allowing public input for a stable tax policy. I am not saying that I'm against changes. We've changed, since Senate Bill 21, we've changed the tax code significantly in oil and gas by carefully considering those long-term effects. The reality of it is the yes on one side has cherry-picked information in a way that is not reflective of the actual things that have occurred since Senate Bill 21. And I represent a district that was number one in the state in opposition to repealing Senate Bill 21. But in spite of that, we did go back in through HB 247, HB 111, other work to increase taxes on the industry in sort of finer-tuned ways that improved the bottom line for the state, but also took into account the effects on an industry that's very important to us today and will remain very important to us for revenue, jobs, and other positive effects through the next decades. So I don't know how much time there is in each piece of this, but the reality of it is that we just need to bring it back to the legislature and have these discussions in a public setting instead of a bumper sticker claim that says things like you're going to get your PFD back fully funded through this kind of a change, which simply is not the case. We have much greater issues that we're going to have to deal with for revenue overall to the state. And I just think it requires very careful consideration, both sides at the table, both sides of consultants at the table, but scrutinizing changes much more carefully than something that is making, in my view, somewhat baseless claims about the ultimate outcome of this initiative. So I am strongly a no on one and looking forward to the discussion over the next 45 minutes.
Thank you so much, Senator Michiki. I am going to allow, I'm going to ask everybody to respond if you have any response to the opening statements. But first, I want to make sure everybody knows that you can call in with your questions 235-7721 for questions and comments. Or Chloe is standing by to take your call. She can write your question down and send it in, or we can patch you through and you can ask it in person. That's 235-7721. And I have my email open for Kathleen@kbbi.org. I can also take questions there, but please call to help divide the labor for the morning. I want to start with yes on one. Do you have any, Bob Shavelson, do you have any response to the opening statement for One Alaska?
Yeah, I'd like to respond, Kathleen. Thank you. And, you know, these are the same arguments and the same fear-mongering that we've heard for so long. I'm looking at right now an advertisement from AOGA, CARA's organization, the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, from the 1980s. It was in the United Fishermen of Alaska newsletter. And it raises the same prospects of too much taxes and too many regulations, and if the burden's too much, industry will go elsewhere and take their jobs. And these are the same, dark clouds and ominous, forbearing stuff that we just heard here. And, you know, it's always the wrong time to ask the industry to pay their fair share, right? If the economy's humming, then taxes will kill it. If the economy's hurting, it's going to make it worse. But the fact is that industry never and will never agree to pay its fair share because it can make higher profits if it takes more of our money. A great example, when we tried to ask the industry to contribute one penny per barrel to help pay for the spill prevention fund that helps up clean up the oil industry's mess, they fought that tooth and nail, and guess who got the burden for that tax? Alaskans who drive cars and boats. We had to assume the burden of that tax because the oil industry couldn't afford a penny a barrel. So when they said now's the wrong time, you know, when is the right time? It's never the right time for them.
Okay, and Paul Seaton, do you have anything you want to add?
I do. I always like to correct the idea that this is all based on prices, because if we look back, there were 2 years before SB 21 that had almost identical prices to 2 years after SB 21. If you look at 2009, it was $68.34, and in 2019, it was $69.46. That's $1.12 more under SB 21. We lost 400% of our tax under SB 21. It went from $12.09 a barrel down to $3.14 a barrel. And this is per barrel, so it takes away any variation in the amount of oil that was produced. This is per barrel, what that was, and a 400% loss. If you look at the other 2 years that were about $74 a barrel, you see that we had a tax reduction of 600%. So when they claim that, oh, it's going to cost 150 to 300% tax increase, that's only half of what they got under SB 21. We're just getting back some of our fair share under this bill. And getting rid of that per barrel credit is especially important.
And Senator Michicki and Kara Moriarty, do you want to respond to any of the assertions made in the opening statement or to what Bob Shavelson and Paul Seaton were just saying?
I would think just one point of clarification. You know, vote yes is saying that, and I just had a chance to look at Mr. Seaton's slides. You know, they're suggesting that we no longer pay production tax in Alaska, and that is simply not true. And if you look at the production tax revenue every single year, we've paid it every single year. In fact, if you didn't have the gross minimum floor of 4%, if we still had ACEs from 2007 to 2013, that is 2 years we would not have paid production tax because prices dropped so low in 2016 and 2017. How they get to that is they take the amount of production tax that is paid almost primarily from companies that never qualified for cash credits, and they subtract cash credits against that to get this magical negative number. Well, the credits, the companies that are targeted by ballot measure one never qualified for these cashable credits in the first place. And so it's a bit of a misnomer, and it's for me a little not truth in advertising. I will just also take a stab at the per barrel credit. When Senate Bill 21 was passed, we went from a 25% tax rate to a 35% tax rate. And prices were high, and everyone recognized if prices were to go low, there's no way the per barrel credit or the 35% tax rate would be competitive. There's no way we could compete, and the industry would suffer. And so the per barrel credit was created as an adjustment to the tax rate as prices go down, and then the credit is eliminated as prices go back up. And what's interesting to me is, you know, one of the very supporters of Vote Yes, who has now been has been claimed to have been written Senate Bill 20 or Ballot Measure 1, and that's our former Tax Division Director Ken Elper. He was quoted as saying, and I'm quoting, "It's hard to really consider per barrel credits a credit in the context of inducing to do work. It's really what we're calling an integral part of the system." So without the per barrel credit, we have an extremely high production tax rate, especially at these prices today.
And Kathleen?
Yeah, go ahead. I've got some questions. I got a question stacking up, so quickly,
okay,
go ahead.
Before we go there, the per barrel credit is simply a giveaway on these three fields. There's nothing about it. At low prices, they're going to be paying the minimum tax anywhere. They're not going to be paying the profit tax. But when they're in the profit tax range, I know Senator Michicki was responsible for getting that 35% up there, but that means that you Alaskans pay 35% of everything they spend on the North Slope. That's right, that 35%, they don't pay that. They wouldn't pay it until $165 a barrel, but they get the credit of that 35%, and they get to take it off of their taxes on, in Prudhoe Bay, Kuparik, and Alpine. And this is just not right. It's not fair to Alaska, and we need to get rid of that because it's not needed.
So I want to get to some of the listener questions because I've got four of them now. Go ahead, Senator.
Yeah, we're kind of doing a little back and forth.
It's okay.
Between the statements.
This is the time for that.
Well, I do think it's, I did introduce the per barrel credit, and actually it's interesting because some of the folks that did not support Senate Bill 21 while it was working through the process in the legislature needed something for some progressivity designed into that bill. And Kara talked about that a little bit. It is an offset to the tax. It is not a credit. Much like, so if you compare it to like the Cook Inlet Recovery Act, which I very much opposed and could not believe, it was one of the reasons I got into the legislature, and Representative Seaton supported that bill, and I don't, Paul's a friend of mine, and this is not a negative interaction here, but I could not believe that our legislature passed that bill, which handsomely rewarded nothing. In this case, the per barrel credit was providing somewhat of progressivity into Senate Bill 21. And then, of course, it went to the House, and they shifted my $5 per barrel incentive, if you will, to a sliding scale, which kind of blew my whole concept. But the reality was it was to increase the tax, yet provide some progressivity because the $5 of a barrel had a different impact at $40 than it would at $100, obviously. Unfortunately, that has been misunderstood. We have killed all of the cashable and other credits in a way that I feel has been much better for the state and frankly has been something the industry has been able to adjust to. But moving forward, if we want to talk about the removal of that per barrel credit, I'm all about that. Let's understand that on the overall process and see if we have the right base tax rate at 35%, which is high. But as I'll wrap this up quickly. Remember, that's talking about production tax, where you're not adding in the 12.5% required royalty that you pay even when you're at a loss. Corporate taxes, sales taxes, property taxes that come along with it for an ultimate government take, which is imperative that we understand not only in the industry of oil and gas, but in every other corporate industry that's happening in the state. You have to look at government take, not just one segment of the tax regime.
Thank you. Senator, I want to get to some of these questions. First of all, who's going to take this one? Ron asks, some people claim oil companies might leave Alaska if we tax them on the oil they remove. How does that amount, how does the amount those companies pay now compare to what they pay elsewhere in, say, Bolivia, Norway, Nigeria? Senator, can you answer that question?
Well, I can. So like with any industry, particularly a corporate industry that, that invests around the world, any change you make to a tax structure is going to impact the ability for them to draw investment. And people can say that that's nonsense all they want to. That doesn't make it true. I will tell you, when we're competing for investment, if we are not in that band of competitiveness, which, remember, through Senate Bill 21, we created an oil and gas competitive board that sort of reviews that we're staying in that band with similarly situated production regions. If we don't compete, that money will go elsewhere. And folks can say they won't leave. We just lost one of the major three players and moved to a different tier of investment through Hilcorp. So when you can't compete, folks will go elsewhere. And that's in any industry. Again, I wish we were discussing this as Industry X instead of oil and gas, where people have their own sort of bias against normally anyway. But you have to compete. And if this puts us outside of that band, we are going to have a reduction of investment. And really, no one disagrees with that. What we're trying to define here is, what is that band and how should we move forward responsibly in the future if we do have a change to our tax policy?
Thank you. Yeah. And Paul Seaton, do you want to add something?
I do. And two of the slides that you have in those eight decks there let you know what the competitiveness was. PFC Energy in 2013, when we were doing this, looked at that. And Alaska Newfields, they were, the company take was 35%, and Legacy Fields was 38%. ConocoPhillips, the next slide in that package, shows their presentation to the legislature, where they say at $65 a barrel, they make 48% of the total value, and at 60, they make 47%. Well, there's a big difference between 47% and a third, where Hammond said the company share should be. And that difference is our deficit. It's not fair to Alaska, and we need to vote yes on one.
Steve is online too. Steve, are you there?
Hello. Hi, my biggest question is, will ballot measure one actually create jobs if passed?
Okay, thanks, Steve. Can you you want to take that off the air? So this is a big one, because as I was doing my research for this show, both people who support this tax and who don't support this tax, who oppose this tax, both say that their side will create more jobs. So Steve's question, first I want to start with Kara.
Oh, thank you for the question, Steve. And I think that's a really important question, because as we look at this issue, and you look at it holistically, the oil and gas industry accounts for over 25% of all jobs and wages in the state. And our direct jobs may not be as much as fishing or tourism in a good year, I should say. But when you look at the amount of money that we spend hiring contractors, and then when we go out and spend money, no other industry comes close to that economic generator. And economists have said that for the last 20 years. That is not new data. But I think what is important then is, because there was no economic analysis or modeling from Vote Yes, the ANCSA Regional Association, the organization that represents all 12 of the Alaska land-based Native corporations, were trying to wrestle with this issue for their over 100,000 shareholders. And they went out and hired a consultant that provided support from, that had support from the McDowell Group. And they issued a report a week or two ago that says, if you look at this issue and the importance of the industry and Alaska's economy, they are forecasting that there is likely to be over 6,300 jobs lost if ballot measure one is passed. Good paying jobs in the oil and gas industry, and a reduction of 14% investment. That could be up to $6-7 billion. And there's just not a lot of companies or other industries, back to Senator Michikis' point about Industry X, that is talking about that level of investment over the next decade. So, you know, for us, we see it, we know that how that will change the way the industry spends money, but you have an independent economist telling you that there will absolutely be job loss in the state of Alaska.
Okay, and so Paul Seaton?
Yeah, thank you very much. And if people go to that last slide, that's when they get a chance, they'll see that under ACES, we started with 10,400 jobs, and then it climbed in 2010 to 12,700, and then it climbed to 14,800. When SB 21 was not repealed, then it dropped 2 years later to 11,400, and 2 years later to 9,300. So the job losses were under SB 21, not under ACES. And the question is, what's happening to the money? The money is leaving Alaska. It 68% of ConocoPhillips' profits were made in Alaska, and only 15% of their investment here. That meant that money was leaving. If we keep another $1 billion average per year in Alaska, that gets invested in Alaska in jobs or in PFDs or in maintenance of roads. Those are all creating jobs. $1 billion of economic development without even talking about the multiplier effect of having $1 billion here. So the idea that keeping another $1 billion in Alaska that will be invested and spent here is going to reduce jobs is just nonsensical.
So I have a caller on the line. I'm going to get to the caller in just a moment, but I need to get some questions that have been stacking up. This one I'm going to direct to Senator Michikis, unless someone else is interested in taking it first. Oil and gas pays 12.5% gross royalties to the state of Alaska. How many other resources in Alaska pay that much off the top? Are resources like fishing, tourism, and mining going to pay those sorts of royalties?
Well, that's an excellent question, frankly. So, yes, no one else pays anywhere close. Again, looking at the, we are trying to make our living off of Industry X. And when things get tight, we try to squeeze Industry X. When Governor, then Senator Dunleavy tried to increase, and I'm a fisherman, I'm a commercial fisherman, have been pretty much my whole life. I certainly did not support his bill, but when he tried to dramatically increase royalty to something similar to the oil royalty that oil and gas pays, you would think that a nuclear bomb had just been dropped in Juneau. And I didn't support his bill. It's not the way to tax a renewable resource like fishing, clearly. But when you look at mining and oil and gas and tourism and when you look at tourism, fishing, and mining, if you want to talk about fair share, that would be a very different discussion. But when you add in the royalty, production tax, property tax, corporate tax, and sales tax that the industry pays, we are trying to make our living off of one industry, Industry X, and this initiative tries to suck it all out of them as well. And when you want to talk about a fair share, if we were to apply those same principles to the other industries, they simply would not exist in Alaska today because they would pull out and invest elsewhere where they had a greater margin of profitability.
And I got a question to Kathleen at KBBI.org. Senator Michikis, you're not just a commercial fisherman. Can you disclose your financial support from oil companies?
I do not. I am not employed in the oil and gas industry. If that's what we should have started with that, because
yeah,
you know it's going to come up. I was with ConocoPhillips for 35 years. I retired a couple of years ago. The reality of it is I'm just an Alaskan right now that's trying to do my best for the best outcome for the people of my district in the state of Alaska. And I have no financial support from the oil industry and haven't for a couple of years.
Thank you, Senator.
But
what that
brings with that is the experience of knowing what it takes to fight for investment in a producing regime. I've been sitting in those rooms years ago when we were talking about where ConocoPhillips was going to invest. And during ACES, yes, there were 14,800 jobs because that tax regime was so fundamentally flawed that it incentivized spending money and making jobs as opposed to operating efficiently and providing less revenue for the companies and more for the state of Alaska. There were times in the last couple of years where ACES would have produced zero revenue for the state of Alaska. And that adjustment was something I understood. Again, I would have opposed the Cook Inlet Recovery Act that paid more than the entire industry was worth in credits in Cook Inlet. And I'm always open to discussing what is the fair distribution of profitability between the state of Alaska and ConocoPhillips and other companies. But I understand that mix better than a lot, which is why I would not have supported the Cook Inlet Recovery Act and why I increased the base tax in Senate Bill 21.
Thank you. And Bob Shavelson?
Well, a couple things, and I appreciate Peter talking about his employment, and I just want to get out there. You know, Peter, you know, you were one of two people along with Kevin Myers who were working for ConocoPhillips at the time that you cast those crucial two votes to push Senate Bill 21 across the line in the Senate. So I know you might say that the rules required you to do that. You don't have to show up for a vote. So that to me was a conflict of interest that should have precluded you from participating. But my real point is that, you know, when we try to depersonalize this and talk about, you know, Industry X, let's be clear. We're talking about the largest and most powerful corporations on the planet right now. And, you know, by conservative estimates, we give oil companies about $20 billion a year in subsidies in the United States. You know, there's no such thing as a free market when we're talking about the oil and gas industry. So, you know, they never account for their cost of climate change. You know, in fact, they pay companies to do research to deny climate change. So, you know, the real costs of oil production have never been calculated here. And all we're asking for now is a few more pennies on the dollar so we don't have to cut our ferries, so we don't have to cut education for our kids, so we have something to support our PFD, and so all that money just doesn't go out of the state, as Paul mentioned.
So I have left the caller on the line hanging for some time. Caller, are you still there?
I'm here.
Go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Sarah calling from Cooper Landing. I had a question. I don't have a firm opinion on this ballot measure at this point, but one thing that sticks in my head, and I'd like to ask, I guess maybe Senator Machicki this question, is the timing. We are in the middle of the global pandemic that doesn't seem to be letting up. We've got thousands of Alaskans out of work. I have personally some very close friends and family that have lost really good jobs, and it just seems like the timing of this is really unfortunate, kind of regardless of the merits of the ballot measure. So my question is this something that could be taken up by the legislature instead? We're going to have a brand new legislature come 2021 with lots of new faces and lots of new opinions on oil taxes. The timing seems really bad to me, and I'd like to know if ballot measure one goes down, is there another way to address oil taxes?
And Kathleen?
Go ahead.
Kathleen, the truth is there is so much influence of the oil industry in the legislature that they're not even able to take up oil taxes. You saw Senate Bill 128, which was the full rounded modification or explanation of this initiative that was introduced into the Senate, and they refused to have a hearing on it. So, you know, this is not a question of, oh, there couldn't have been analysis and there couldn't have been those kind of things. They didn't want to have those kind of things. We have enough people getting money for campaigns and those kind of obligations that the influence of the in the legislature is pervasive.
So that's Paul Seaton from Yes on One, but that question is for Senator Machicki. You want to go ahead and talk about the timing of it?
Yeah, the timing literally could not be worse. And I recommend people pick up the spring fall revenue forecast. You can go on the Department of Revenue site. It's laced with discussion about the impacts from COVID-19, which is why everything is selling at a lower price and why every one of our industries, including Industry X, is dramatically and negatively impacted. The legislature will take it up. The legislature will discuss potential changes. And frankly, here's the way the election went last year. The folks that were unwilling to have that discussion are no longer there. And we have to be open to having a transparent and clear discussion publicly involving the public, expert consultants from both sides, and legislators from both sides to have these discussions. I've always been open to it. Representative Seaton is right. It was kind of shut down last year. That's too bad. It should never be shut down. These should be living documents where we can demonstrate the value of our current regime and discuss tweaks that must occur as things change in the marketplace going forward. But yes, the timing couldn't be worse, which is why the public should vote no on one and then push your legislature to have these discussions with expert consultants on hand to analyze the cause and effect of any changes as we go forward.
And caller, do you feel like that addressed your question?
Yeah, I guess I'm also thinking, too, just in the context of the pandemic and this crushing economy we're living through. Thank you. I just think the timing is off. So I appreciate the insight from both lawmakers. Thank you
so much. Now, I've got a question here that I'm not sure. I think we're going to have to unpack. I got a question called in, which says, a few years back, we were having brownouts in the fear of not having enough gas in the winter. We no longer have that program. Is that because of the credit program that we know that we're not doing that anymore? And secondly, why would you count Cook Inlet tax credits against taxes paid by the North Slope? I think I had you start. Kara, do you want to start with that one?
Sure. I think, you know, well, Senator Michicki may not have voted for the Cook Inlet Recovery Act, and that may have led him to be in the legislature. The reality was, you know, at the time, and I had actually moved to Anchorage shortly before that, and, you know, we were doing these drills and turn your heat down to 60 and, you know, all of those things that all of us in South Central were doing because, frankly, you know, the majors that were in Cook Inlet at the time we're not reinvesting in the Cook Inlet platforms and the Cook Inlet fields anymore. And so the Cook Inlet Recovery Act did pass, may not have been perfect, but did pass, and that changed. And we don't talk about that anymore because we did get new players like Hillcorp to come in and invest hundreds of millions of dollars into those aging infrastructure. We now have gas storage facilities. We have small companies like Bluecrest that is producing oil, hoping that they can get to gas someday. And I think the reality is when you talk about the credit program that incentivized that, you know, initially those were not cash credits until legislators found out that those companies could sell them to the large companies to deduct against their tax, and they didn't want to provide a benefit to those companies, and so they started offering straight cash for those credits. And, you know, now the credit program has gone away. As Senator Michicki mentioned, you know, prices dropped and the state lost money and couldn't afford that. But the Cook Inlet Recovery Act did lead to the fact that we had more investment, we had more production, and we haven't seen those type of issues anymore. So policy does create incentives, and companies do respond to policy. And Representative Seaton mentioned an analysis from 2013, but Daniel Juergens' firm, IHS Markit, recently came out just about 6 weeks ago with an analysis that said, and I'm quoting, Alaska's fiscal system becomes one of the least competitive oil and gas fiscal systems in the U.S. under the Fair Share Act. Alaska's ranking within international peer group erodes as well. So while the intention may be good to get more money from oil to help pay for the state's challenges, the reality is economists and consultants today are saying in this environment, this tax, which would be higher than ACES in this price environment, would make us one of the least competitive systems in the world.
Thank you. And Paul Seaton, do you want to respond to that?
Sure. That PFC energy analysis was really well done. We looked at it, and right now, ConocoPhillips would be the fifth greatest margin that they would take in company take in the world in Alaska with the 48%, 47 or 48% retention of gross value that they presented to the legislature. That's what they presented to the legislature. So, you know, I do want to clear up one other thing. People were talking about paying royalty. They're not paying royalty. We get 12.5% of all of the barrels that come out of the ground. That's our ownership oil. We take some of that and we send it down, pay the transportation down the pipeline and bring it around and sell it to the refinery over here. And the rest of it, we sell to them. They're not paying us. They're buying our oil. And that was the original deal, was that the 12.5% is royalty share that we can take in either kind or in value at our discretion. We make that judgment once a year. So that's not like a tax they are paying. This production tax is a severance tax. They're taking oil, a non-renewable resource, out of Alaska. It will never be replenished. And that's what the production tax is. And in the last 5 years, under SB 21, we've averaged negative $16 million. In other words, we ended up owing more than we received in production tax under SB 21. It's not fair to Alaska.
Do you want to add something to that, Bob Shavelson?
Just briefly, Kathleen, thank you. And, you know, I just think we have to be honest. You know, Sean Parnell is a former ConocoPhillips lobbyist before he was governor and pushed through the industry bill, SB 21. Under SB 21, we've lost jobs, we've lost revenues, we've lost investments. And the argument I hear from the other side is if I could summarize it, it's woe is me, the poor oil companies. And the CEO of ConocoPhillips makes more than $50,000 a day. And the CEO of Hilcorp is worth more than $3.5 billion. You know, this is a lot of money. Kara, you run a nonprofit organization for the oil and gas industry. You make over $250,000 a year. That's great. I applaud you for that. But at a time when we're cutting ferries and we're cutting funds for our seniors and for our kids and for education, we're soon going to see cuts to our PFD. I think it's time for the oil industry to pay their fair share.
Well, you called out Kara Moriarty in that, so I want to give her a chance to respond. Kara Moriarty, would you like to respond to that?
Well, sure. I would be happy to. I think, you know, one of the things I would like to go back to first is that, you know, ConocoPhillips continually gets mentioned about making more here than anywhere else. And I'm not going to comment on the CEO's salary. I don't know those details. But there's often a report that gets cited from the Legislative Research Services that talks about ConocoPhillips' adjusted net income per barrel of oil equivalent. And that is very important because that is the report that Vote Yes is using to say ConocoPhillips makes more here than anywhere else and they can afford to pay this tax. But what they forget to include or disclose to the public is in a footnote that's in the report every single time, is it says the barrel of oil equivalent is primarily used as a means of comparing total hydrocarbon energy produced among geographic locations, not profitability. Because it does not capture wildly varying economic factors, drawing conclusions on profitability based solely on this measure is problematic. So Vote Yes is utilizing data that the Legislative Research Services says should not be used in this way. As far as us paying our fair share, we are paying today. We have paid over $19 billion in royalties and taxes to the state of Alaska since Senate Bill 21 passed. No other industry comes even remotely close to that. And even in this price environment, last year we paid to the state and local governments about $3 billion a year. As far as my personal salary, Mr. Shavelson wants to attack me personally. I can confirm I work very hard, I'm very committed, and I'm very proud to work for this industry.
That was not an attack. It was just a statement that you're well compensated because you're paid by some of the richest corporations on the planet.
Well, you're really here representing One Alaska. Is that correct, Kara?
Absolutely. I mean, in my 15-year career at the Alaska Oil and Gas Association, I have worked to defeat 5 ballot measures in that time frame. All of them have been incredibly problematic policies, mostly tax-related. The one in 2018 was permitting-related. But ballot measures are a very, we would argue, are the wrong tool for complex policy. You cannot have the PFC energy analysis or IHS market. You can't offer different amendments and see what that impact would be. And honestly, I find ballot measure 1 to be one of the most risky and reckless ballot measures that we have faced yet to date. And I am very proud to work with this coalition with representatives from Uktiavik to Ketchikan. We have over 400 businesses statewide, Alaska Native corporations, labor unions, and thousands of Alaskans who will be voting no on November 3rd.
Well, how much of that is funding your organization? Because your postings show that over 90% of the campaign funds come from BP, ConocoPhillips, ExxonMobil, and Hillcorp. So
The campaign is primarily funded by those companies. But I think what's important to remember is that, you know, it takes a lot to run a statewide campaign when we have to provide factual information. Nothing that we put out is always verified by third-party sources. So, you know, this claim that we're not putting out facts is absolutely false. And so it takes a lot of time and effort to do
that. Well, I wasn't claiming that you weren't putting out facts.
That does not mean that this coalition is not made up of real Alaskans who are concerned about the state's future and who view ballot measure 1 as bad policy, and they'll be voting no.
So are you saying that when I'm putting out things that aren't facts, are you saying that you're not funded by Exxon, Conoco, BP, and Hillcorp for over 90% of your campaign?
No, I said the campaign
is
primarily funded by those companies, but it doesn't mean that we don't represent just because the 400 businesses and Alaska Native corporations and labor unions and thousands of Alaskans, just because they didn't write a check to the campaign does not mean that One Alaska doesn't represent a broad coalition.
Gotcha. Thank you. And it's about time for final comments. I'm going to start going around. Bob Shavelson, do you want to start?
Sure, I'll just respond to that very, very briefly. You know, the oil industry is made up of very smart people, and, you know, they recognize that Alaska is an incredible opportunity here. They're making more profit in Alaska than most other places in the world. On fighting these ballot measures, you know, Kara talked about the number of ballot measures she's been paid to defeat. You know, the oil industry recognizes it makes so much sense to spend millions to make billions. You know, right now, we've got these major oil companies. They've spent $17 million to date to defeat this ballot measure. Our side spent a little over $1 million, and we've got 1,000 individual Alaskans ponying up their money for it. We saw the same exact thing in 2014 on the ballot measure there to overturn the oil tax giveaway in Senate Bill 21. The oil companies spent over $14 million, and our side spent under $500,000. So, again, it's a great return on investment when you can spend millions of dollars to get billions of dollars, and that's what we're seeing from the oil industry in Alaska today.
Go ahead.
Kathleen.
This is Paul Seaton with a final comment.
Yeah, I just wanted to make it clear that we are putting out on graph number 6 there the actual amount of the SEC filing, ConocoPhillips, lost $2.445 billion from 2016 to 2019 in the lower 48, and they made $5.119 billion in Alaska. That's totals, but they lost money down there, and they made money here, so it's not a per-barrel equivalent or anything else. It's whether your investments are paying off or not, and I wanted to clear up one thing. They keep saying, oh, we paid in taxes and royalties. They didn't pay in royalties. They bought our oil with money. But they bought something. They didn't pay us a tax. So that there's a whole difference between royalty and tax, and people read need to realize that severance tax is something that Alaska is entitled to. We need to get, and our fair share is really important to get, because without that, you're going to see all these cuts to the university and to schools and to road maintenance and all those things. So Alaska needs its fair share, and I urge people to vote yes on one.
And Senator Machicki, can I give you the final word?
Well, certainly. Thank you. And thanks for having us all on today. I think it's really important for the public to hear this. You know, it's funny because people say, wait a minute, when you try to increase oil taxes, oil companies fight it. Well, I can tell you, when they tried to increase the head tax on tourism for cruise ships, Holland America was there. When there were fishing tax increases, Peter Pan and Icicle were there. When you try to cut education, NEA is there. When you have changes to labor, IBEW is there. Of course, the interested parties are going to invest. And we could spend an entire show explaining the BOE equivalent.
Well you've got a minute to sum up.
Okay, well, I'm sorry that prior Representative Seaton is simply incorrect on the BOE and the royalty. Royalties vary dramatically from place to place. It is a part of the government take. And yes, royalty is what we have coming to us as a state, and it's completely appropriate, but it is a part of the ultimate government take. And when you keep talking about these the wealthiest companies on the planet, Exxon's not even in the Dow Industrial Index any longer. I mean, look at what some of these other companies, they have made the elephants of Apple and Amazon and others have made oil companies look relatively small. And right now is not the time to dramatically impact the industry with an irresponsible approach that should be taken up by the legislature. I look forward to that. I hope people vote no. I hope this goes down, and I look forward to meeting with the next legislature talking about these issues on how to responsibly evaluate changes to the tax regime we have in Alaska right now. So please vote no on one.
Thank you, Senator. The election is coming up on November 3rd. This is Ballot Measure 1. I want to thank all of my guests, Senator Peter Machicki, Kara Moriarty, Bob Shavelson, and Paul Seaton. This is KBBI Homer. I'm Kathleen Gustafson.